Welcome to McKinsey on Building Products, a space dedicated to the in-depth exploration of software product management and engineering. I'm your host, Ricky Singh. Whether you're an experienced product manager, software engineer, or a builder embarking on an exciting journey in this dynamic field, we've got you covered to ensure you remain at the forefront. In this podcast series, you will hear from accomplished product and engineering leaders as they share valuable insights from real-world experience building outstanding products. Visit McKinsey Product Academy to discover more content on our learning platform. Welcome back, everyone, to McKinsey Product Academy. Today's speaker is Alex Hardiman. She's the Chief Product Officer at New York Times and will be talking to us about product outside of pure technology companies.
Thank you so much, Ricky and McKinsey, for having me. So I am Alex Hardiman. I'm the Chief Product Officer at the New York Times, and I'm really, really excited to talk about what it's like to approach product management and the idea of product-driven growth outside of a classic tech company, and more specifically in my case, really in the context of a journalism company that has a direct-to-consumer subscription business. I'm not a teacher, and this isn't a curriculum. I'm a hands-on builder, an operator, and leader of product managers. And there's just a ton of variety and diversity when it comes to thinking about product management outside of big tech. So what I'll talk about today is really rooted in my own experience of about 15 plus years in the product space. And I really hope that there are a couple of insights here that help you out in your own respective product journeys. As I was thinking about my own experience, there were really four key themes that kept coming up when I was comparing and contrasting product management at tech and non-tech companies. The first is this idea of ambition and impact. So when I was thinking about impact at the Times, we're very impact-driven, but we're also incredibly purpose-driven. And so impact for us is defined by the impact that we not only drive for the business, but also for our mission. And that's because we're optimizing for not only a strong business, but an informed democracy at a time when I'd say facts are under assault, and we want to really help people make sense of a really complicated world. The second big theme that I was thinking about is the idea of customer focus. Great product managers, regardless of their company or their industry, they know their customers, they know their market, and they know the business that they're in. But something that's pretty unique to product managers at the Times is that they also really need to know the craft of journalism. And that's because in addition to building products for consumers and subscribers or products for internal engineers, we also build creative tools for, at this point, over 2,000 of our journalists. The third theme is core product skills. So this is also, I would say, a big commonality. A lot of the skills that make PMs really successful in tech companies, like strong product sense, excellent execution, leadership and drive, these are just as relevant in other companies with a fairly established product practice. The thing though about the Times, when I think about what is like actually a little bit different, is that when I think about how our most magical products are born, it really comes from a place of deep, deep creativity. And that's because PMs at the Times really need to understand that perfect blend of art and science. They need to value expert editorial judgment alongside deep data sets and the right customer insights. And so because of this, our PMs come from, I would say, a really diverse range of backgrounds and disciplines. I've found that non-tech companies can sometimes be actually more inclusive of different backgrounds and skill sets. The last one is just around how we work. So the actual way that PMs are organized in product development teams and how they collaborate with other functions like design or engineering can also be quite similar. A key difference at a place like the Times is that PMs work across the full stack of the product. The Times owns their own original content, owns the software around that content that makes it more valuable to more people, and also owns the distribution of that software and that product suite. And that's pretty different from working at a place like Facebook, where we controlled the software and the distribution, but not the content. And so at the Times, we've really brought content and product levers together. We have editors embedded in teams who are more product-minded. We have product managers who are more editorially minded. So now I kind of want to talk about what motivates a lot of PMs to build products outside of pure tech. And at the Times, it really is the strength of our mission. And that's to seek the truth and to help people understand the world. And it's also because of our ambition. So we have been around for over 170 years. We've had some big highs and some big lows, but the Times has succeeded by really embracing change and growth that is directly propelled by today, the software and the products that we build. If you think about it, again, when we started off back in the 1850s, we were a local newspaper. And today we're a modern D2C subscription company. And so product has just been such a central force behind that progress. And product managers are really kind of paving the way. Another signal then that kind of product and product-driven growth are only becoming more central to the success of non-tech companies is the importance of product vision and product strategy from the top of the company all the way down. And so as an example, at the Times, we recently introduced a new product vision to really rally the entire company. And for us, it's to become the essential subscription for every curious English-speaking person who's really seeking to understand and engage with the world. And just to give you a sense of scale at the Times, when we think about our audience, we see a total addressable market of about 135 million people around the world who are open to paying for the type of journalism-based products that we make. So when you think about audience then, it sort of leads you to like, so what do you invest in? And we really invest in the portfolio of products because they appeal to many of our TAM's top interest areas and jobs to be done, which is the framework that we use. And then we start with our news product, which is our largest, but there are other products outside of news like games, cooking, The Athletic, and Wirecutter. And they're all prioritized within our strategy because they really leverage unique competitive advantages at the New York Times that we really honed in the news space over the last couple of decades. Product vision might not come naturally or kind of right away to some companies outside of tech, but I really do think it's one of the most useful tools to help any company really inspire, align, and rally teams towards a common purpose and a common goal. When non-tech companies, I think, have a clear understanding of their customers and their market and their offerings, it really then makes it a lot easier to pursue real product-driven growth and to do it at scale. And I think we all talk about product-driven growth a lot. I'll just clarify, when I mean it in this context, I mean a growth model that really relies on the product itself as the primary driver of audience acquisition, conversion, and retention. And so at the Times, we have in our direct-to-consumer business, product teams who work across each part of the funnel. When you think about how a PM identifies their customer, prioritizes opportunity with an impact mindset, builds products with their cross-functional teams, leads in a way that considers the whole vision, those are now pretty universal characteristics. Overall, I couldn't be more optimistic about the value and the impact of PMs and the product discipline at non-tech companies today. And I just think that product is going to only become more understood, more sought after, and more fulfilling in non-tech contexts over the next several years. There are huge problems in the world, huge opportunity. This is a versatile skill set. It's really fun and it's really meaningful to work on problems at scale that drive impact in the world.
Thanks so much, Alex. What is the mission leadership responsible for and what sort of roles are involved there?
Yeah, it's a great question. So the mission leader is kind of like the general manager of an area. So the responsibilities are basically around like setting the strategy and the OKRs for the cross-functional team, prioritizing the roadmap, and at the end of the day, being accountable for the results. And what I really like about the mission lead strategy is depending on what the mission is responsible for, that leader could come from a couple of different functions. For instance, if you're the mission lead for cooking, you need like really excellent consumer product experience. And so the people overseeing kind of that type of role tend to come from their product discipline. If, let's say, you're the mission lead of data platforms, right? That tends to be a leader who has deep, deep technical experience, probably an engineering background, and might report, in our case, reports up to our CTO.
That's super helpful. And then as we get into the next layer, when you talk about your consumer mission teams, what metrics do they use to measure their success?
So the way that we do it is when we set our strategy at the enterprise level, like at the top of the company, we have a couple of very broad goals that we want to make sure we reach. From an audience perspective, weekly active users. From a subscriber perspective, we want to understand the percentage of subscribers engaged every week. In terms of subscribers and subscriptions, how many new are we adding, you know, in a given period? We look at revenue. So we have kind of our top line metrics, and these are metrics that, you know, we ultimately then even report out in our earnings because we're a publicly traded company. Teams have different metrics. So they have kind of what we call their indicator metrics. If you work on newsletters, your metric might be getting the number of subscribers who are signed up for a given email. And we know that that's important because that ladders directly into our weekly active user and our subscriber engagement numbers. And so we kind of use like a classic team level indicator metric model where teams are responsible for metrics that they can directly move. And then we make sure that we can track the movement of those team level indicator metrics against our enterprise goals.
At the end of the day, the news is the product. The journalists are bringing that in so they can be considered as part of that product. So how does the coordination happen between the newsroom and the PMs?
The way that it works is that we actually have in a cross-functional team, we have journalists and editors who are embedded. And so they are full members of the team, which means when we think about the strategy, when we think about the goals, we really understand the needs from the journalist and the editor perspective. They understand what we're trying to create from like a business value perspective, and we find where they meet in the middle. That's where you really see the magic happen, right? Where you're right, the journalism is the product. You can't separate the two. It's not like product teams ship a box and the newsroom just pipes something in. It literally is the same thing. And so with live, what happens is a journalist might say, I'll just kind of give you an example of something that really happened. I would love to get more reporter voices kind of in the mix. Like we have people who are on the ground in Ukraine. They don't necessarily have time to write a fully reported story, but they have these incredible observations and insights. And how can we make sure that we can get that in front of our readers in a way that really gives them a sense of what's happening? And so that's how we came up with like reporter updates, where, you know, it almost looks like our version of a highly curated tweet where you have a reporter with their own credibility and their background. We've got a journalist, we've got a story, we need to test a new format, let's go. And so you really have editors who are becoming, I think, more product-minded. You have product managers who are really becoming editorially minded. And when you have that mind meld happen, that's where the magic happens. And I think it just starts by really treating editors and journalists as full participants in your cross-functional team. And that's the way that we've been approaching it.
And how do you not make that team so big that it becomes hard to function? Like, how do you balance? You want to be inclusive and you do want to include the right roles. So how do you still keep moving forward?
We haven't really encountered that as so much of a challenge, only because we try to look at the right ratios. So we kind of look at what's the right ratio of product management to design, to data science, to engineering. And then we usually only have one or two editors who are embedded. So we try to stay nimble enough. Cross-functional team might be no more than like 8 to 10 people. And that can actually be really entrepreneurial and really, really fast. And what I love about the teams at the times too, is if they feel like things are getting slow, like I just had a product manager yesterday say, like, I have a sense of like what we can do to be more nimble. Let's try this. Like there's a sense of just like ownership and accountability, because the news cycle just like creates this metabolism where things move fast and PMs and engineers, they just want to catch up.
That's wonderful. How did you decide what sort of artifacts or frameworks did you want to use in your product management practice?
For us, it really comes down to simplicity and clarity of message. And I'll get to jobs to be done in a second. And also something that's been really important for us is really not getting hung up on like jargon and process at the expense of just like, say what you mean, be really clear and make it actionable. The way that we have written our product vision and our product strategy, which is deeply rooted in a ton of market and industry analysis, a ton of data and analytics, a ton of customer insights, and a ton of internal judgment and vision, we really made sure that it was something that was tight and succinct, that, again, if you're a journalist on the book review, or if you're a product manager working on our cloud tooling, like wherever you are, like you really feel like you get it and you can understand your place in the world. So that was the first thing. And that applies to the way that we thought about our product vision and our strategy and kind of the rollout there. For jobs to be done, we spent similarly a good amount of time actually like testing the utility of the framework with a couple of different teams. First, jobs to be done is not the most intuitive title. Like I get it because I've been working within that framework for a long time. But again, if it's not something you've used, and this kind of gets to clarity of communication in a non-tech company, just call it a consumer need. And people are like, oh, I get it. Okay, you're literally just trying to solve someone's problem in the real world. I'm on board. And so the more that we did that around the company, we again really simplified. We tried to get people really empathizing again with the problems to solve. And we did a very careful and deliberate rollout with different teams. It's like, let's come together, let's have a conversation, ask your questions, and let's figure out how you can use this in a way that makes you able to do your work better. And then I think the third thing is similar, just around like data. really making sure that we don't get lost in too many data sets. What are the most important things that above all, we absolutely need to move? And how do we really stay focused? The more we can really help teams tie their team level indicator metrics back to the North Star, and there are only a couple of them that we're trying to move at the enterprise level, it really helps them just like prioritize, feel like they're optimizing for impact and that they're on the right track.
And in that setup, I think you anchored on the product vision so heavily. How does that inform how a PM would make trade-offs? So a PM, for example, might be forced to handle the conflict between creating a great consumer experience and balancing that with digital advertising. So in those situations, how do they handle it?
If you're working on digital advertising, it means you're in a different mission and your job is to create really amazing, in our case, like premium advertising experiences that leverage our first party data because we have a big subscription business. And your job is to then make sure that you can scale that across the entire bundle. And so sometimes you have collision between teams where you want to make sure that a new ad experience shipping into a consumer experience does no harm to the consumer experience. Ideally, it enhances it. But those collisions don't take place for an individual PM because they should have extreme focus on the one thing that they're meant to do. And sometimes you live and learn, you might find that a team gets so big and has too many priorities, and it's a good moment to gut check, what is their mandate? What are their goals? Do you need to restructure? Like, how can you again give people really great focus and a chance to really succeed at doing their best work on one or two things extraordinarily well?
So at that level, when that conflict is being raised, because it would now the conflict is between two mission leads, right?
Yeah.
Who is the person helping them resolve it?
It tends to be me and my colleagues, like our CTO, our chief growth officer. We kind of own a common set of enterprise metrics together. And so there are moments when you need to make a trade-off. And the thing that we really just encourage teams to do is kind of a very healthy practice of escalation where you kind of lay out the pros and cons, and then we come and we own the whole and make the responsible decision for the business together. And everybody has shared context. But I think we're getting better and better at that because it should actually feel like a very healthy thing to do as opposed to a dirty thing.
How have you seen the Times reconcile the content is king mentality and an editorial-driven infrastructure with the need for product-led innovation?
Yeah, a while ago, there might have been a little bit of tension kind of between those two areas. But I think now there is one view that I shared, which just talked about what makes for a really great product. And a product under the New York Times brand has to first and foremost have the best journalism and the best content. It's kind of hard for us to build something that's truly unique and a part of our DNA if it doesn't start with that. The question for PMs is less like, what are you doing that's at odds with editorial? It's more like, how do you make sure that given the great editorial that we have that really appeals to specific consumer needs, how do we make sure that it's discoverable, it's incredibly useful, and it really solves the problems that people have? And so with cooking, for instance, I'll give you an example. The way that you can set it up to work really well is you have editors who kind of understand the market and the insights as they think about commissioning what recipes they believe are going to be really delicious and really wonderful. And they work hand in hand with product managers who are like, okay, how do we improve search? How do we improve recommendations? How do we think about the journey of someone when they're cooking? Let's say they're not in the kitchen with their phone, but they're actually browsing on the web. They probably want to look and save something. So like, how do we make it more easy to save things? And then remind you as soon as you're in the kitchen looking to create your grocery list. So many different ways to sort of think about the utility that you add on top of the content. And so that's been like the way that we've been approaching it, where journalists and editors really help create the best coverage and product managers help them unlock the value and the utility for consumers. And again, when you get the two kind of coming together, it's the opposite of conflict. It's like great ideas and magic. And like that's kind of the zone that we really strive for.
If you're in a non-product company and you're starting out on this transformation journey, are there some things that as a PM you could do to accelerate that or be part of that broader transformation?
One of the things that I think is so great about being a product manager, especially when you walk into that type of context, is that you already have the skills. You just have to apply them in a different way. And what I mean by that is like treat internal culture change the same way that you would treat a piece of software that you want to ship externally to the world. You start by like empathizing with the organization to say, what are the pain points? What are the things that we're trying to solve together? In the case of the New York Times, for us, it's really about how we advance our mission to help people understand and engage with the world. And so that's where, as soon as you sort of anchor in that high level, it's so easy to figure out where product can enable that. You can have a very clear narrative that kind of helps describe that. And you want like a couple of examples. Like I'll tell you one that really unlocked when I was doing the pivot from print to mobile, really unlocked change with the newsroom was when I like tried to help describe how to scale your journalism. And so if you're a journalist, historically, being on the front page of the newspaper, which we call A1, is like the most remarkable thing. Like that's what you strive for. When you get on A1, you really feel like your journalism is truly recognized. And I remember going through the data and saying, well, you know, if you get a push notification for your story on our app, you're going to reach like 4x the audience. And there was this moment of just like, what? And so like, as soon as again, you say like, it's not about being on the front page of the newspaper. What's really important is that you want to make sure that your story finds its widest audience. So let's help on the product side. Like we can actually figure out how to solve those problems with you. And so again, I really think like treating with the same amount of like care and empathy, the way that you treat your customers outside the building, do that inside the company. And that has certainly worked. I'll also say you have to test and learn. You have to be resilient. Sometimes you can get some confusion or some pushback, but I am such a believer in the value of product and product thinking in all companies nowadays, even if it takes a slightly different form, that I think you just have to really help connect the dots between what the company most needs and where product can really drive tremendous impact and value. It's there. You just have to find it.
How can a PM approach this if the overall leadership is essentially from a non-digital background? Maybe it's a retailer undergoing a transformation. So the leadership understands retail really well, but then does not have the same appreciation for tech. In those situations, is there something that PMs could do more proactively?
I don't mean to give a lazy answer, but again, just at the end of the day, if you're a CEO of a company, even if you don't understand product, you want to be successful. You want to win. And so that is, again, where I think when product managers say, okay, let me pull back. Let me understand our market. What does success look like? And what are the levers and what is the strategy to get there? If you just apply product thinking, even if you don't use the word product, that is one of the best ways, I think, to unlock the impact and the value of what we do as a discipline. And the more you then do it versus just talk about it, like I really think that the best PMs just roll up their sleeves, they get in there, they try it. That is where you actually start to see change take hold naturally. And you can kind of turn people who might be confused or even detractors into like true advocates. But it can take time. If you go like solve the core problems that a company is facing using your product skills, that's the best way to do it.
I think one other thing that came up is you talked about how everyone has their missions. What is the cadence at which missions get assigned and get the OKRs for those missions get reviewed? Like, how does that work?
So the way that it works is that once a year, so in Q4, is when we sort of look ahead to the year. And this is kind of the leadership of the company just to say, what is our strategy? What are the top goals that we need to hit at an enterprise level? And do we even have like the right investment? We sort of put all of those pieces together. Every 6 months, based on that broad plan, we come together as a leadership team. So it's me, our CTO, our chief growth officer, and then mission leads are a part of the process as our function leads, like our head of product design. And we write down a very clear one pager that's like, what is the most important thing that we're going to do that's not written by org lines? It's truly like, what is it that we need to do over the next 6 months? And what are the OKRs? What will success look like if we do it well? And then that is what we use to kind of kick off our planning process. And that is what mission leads then use to build their own OKRs. And we do some alignment sessions just to make sure that we've got the right cross-mission alignment where we need it, that prioritization isn't at conflict with each other. And it tends to work really well on 6 month time horizons because 6 months is long enough where you can actually set pretty ambitious work and targets. And it also means you don't need a 6 month roadmap. Like this is really why OKRs is so helpful. The outcome is what matters. We let the teams help define the ways that they're actually going to drive those outcomes. And so we do it for 6 months. We then learn what worked, what didn't work, and we do it for the next 6 months. And we kind of update the annual strategy in the middle of the year.
And for that one pager, is it aligning on for which customer, what outcome you're driving, what's in that one pager that you share with all the PMs?
Basically, it is that. It's like in very pithy, plain spoken terms, what is our vision? What is our strategy? Who are we building for? What are the most important bets that we need to take? And how will we measure success? And again, this is where I really believe that simplicity is so important because it removes ambiguity. It really helps align teams around the things that matter most. And it also, in a really healthy way, can expose where there's misalignment or where there's tension so that you can proactively work through it with your teams.
what's the one final thought on a product outside of tech companies that you would leave the audience with?
I know this kind of touches on something I said earlier, but I just think that product and product thinking in companies of all kinds has never been more important than it is now. I just feel like the number of problems in the world, the impact that product management skills can apply and like drive against those problems is unlike anything I've seen. And the number of companies who are really appreciative and like understand the value of product thinking is just more than I've ever seen in my career to date. So I would leave hopefully just on like an optimistic note. I think that this is an incredible field to be a part of. And there's so much opportunity to do good.
Thank you so much, Alex.
As we conclude today's episode, we'd love to hear from you. Please visit us at McKinsey Product Academy website. Don't forget to share and subscribe to our podcast and stay tuned for upcoming episodes. Thank you for listening. Until next time, keep building.